keep talking of these various meetings between Jesus and individuals. Here, the meeting of Jesus and Judas Iscariot. I'm not speaking about all of you. I know whom I have chosen, but there is a text of Scripture to be fulfilled. He who eats bread with me has turned against me. I tell you this now before the event, so that when it happens, you may believe that I am what I am. In very truth, I tell you, he who receives any messenger of mine receives me. Receiving me, he receives the one who sent me. After saying this, Jesus exclaimed in deep agitation of spirit, "In truth, in very truth, I tell you, one of you is going to betray me." The disciples looked at one another in bewilderment. Whom could he be speaking of? One of them, the disciple he loved, was reclining close beside Jesus. So Simon Peter nodded to him and said, "Ask who it is he means." That disciple, as he reclined, leaned back close to Jesus and asked, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus replied, "It is the man to whom I give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish." Then, after dipping it in the dish, he took it out and gave it to Judas, son of Simon Iscariot. As soon as Judas had received it, Satan entered him. Jesus said to him, "Do quickly what you have to do." No one at the table understood what he meant by this. Some supposed that as Jesus was in charge of the common purse, Jesus was telling him to buy what was needed for the festival or to make some gift to the poor. As soon as Jesus had received the bread, he went out. It was night. Oh, my words, what are we to make of this incident? Or indeed the whole story of Judas. The paths of Jesus and Judas crossed some years before when Jesus chose Judas as one of his disciples. How long ago, way before the birth of either of them, were these paths destined to meet? Psalm 41 declares, can be applied to the compact between Judas and the Jewish leaders, "My enemies speak evil of me, saying, 'When will he die and his name perish forever?' And if one should come to see me, he mouths empty words while his heart gathers mischief. And when he goes out, he vents it. All those that hate me whisper together against me. They devise plots against me. They say, 'A deadly thing has got hold of him. He will not get up again from where he lies.' And even my bosom friend, in whom I trusted, who shared my bread, has lifted his heel against me." Jesus said he has chosen Judas to fulfill this scripture. Does this mean Judas was predestined to be the instrument of Jesus' arrest and death? If so, what's happened to Judas' free will? It may mean that the inevitability of Judas' action lay in his very character. Jesus perceives he's the kind of person who would betray him and fulfill the scripture. And for this reason, Jesus chose Judas. This gives Judas free will, without shackling him to divine predestination. Even so, we feel a deep mystery here, which is reflected in other dealings of God with men. Over and over again, we feel that much of life is predetermined or predestined. If this is true, then man's free will is extinguished. At the same time, experience convinces us that men and women do have free choices, however limited. If this is true, absolute predestination collapses. We feel we want to assert both are true, but if either one is, it seems to imply the other is false. This situation is termed paradox. Deep inside us, we feel we should maintain both assertions as true, for to deny one in order to secure the other would put us further away from the real truth that holding both in tension of paradox enables us to grasp. The meeting of Jesus and Judas forces us to confront this paradox yet again. And I'll leave you to muse over it in our quiet time of reflection. But in a more mundane way, it raises the issue of moral responsibility. I used, when I was a lawyer, to act for a man called Victor, who was a Pole forced to serve in the German army in World War II. He deserted and joined the French resistance, escaping to England, where he became part of the Free Polish Army, which took a role in the D-Day landings. Unfortunately, for us in England after the war, he was still fighting World War II and living a life of crime. But this is going way back now. Here in Chichester, I could always get him a light sentence by repeating his war record to the chairman of Chichester Magistrates, who was then a retired British Army colonel. However, we have a less rigid variant of the issue Judas has made us face. Victor's childhood is early adulthood, in short, the crucible in which his early life was formed, predisposed rather than predestined him to a life of crime. But in the end, at the point that he committed that particular crime, he chose by free will to do it. What is the balance between formative environmental factors and personal responsibility? In our quiet time, let's consider perhaps how free our freedom of choice is and how much it is predetermined by our background and character. Can the leopard indeed change its spots? And how much do you and I use this as an excuse for our misuse of free will choices? The Judas issue also raises a further question. No doubt Judas believed in Jesus. Jesus, being the Messiah, needed the backing, not the opposition, of the Jewish leadership, or at least of the Sanhedrin. Jesus would not meet the Sanhedrin and was misunderstood by many Pharisees. But he did have sympathizers who were Pharisees, like Nicodemus, Joseph of Arimathea, maybe Simon the Pharisee. These could influence the Sanhedrin. If only Judas could engineer for Jesus to speak to the Sanhedrin and the high priest, God's will for the nation could be achieved. We don't know, but the cunning pact between those against Jesus and Judas to deliver Jesus to them, Judas may have seen as helping the process with a little shove. There are two phrases for us: a little shove and engineer it. In Satan's temptation of Jesus at the beginning of his ministry, Jesus clearly resisted in the third temptation, as recorded by Luke, the tendency to force God's hand. I jump from the pinnacle of the temple, and a Psalm 91 quoted by Satan says, God will instruct his angels to bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone. If the Son of God jumps, God will have to save him. Will have to save him. Forcing God's hand by pushing the other up God's back. This is what Judas, was trying to do. Engineer. Give it a little shove. Force the issue by man's cunning, not God's wisdom. Is that in fact what you and I do when our paths meet with the path of Christ?